Okay, so welcome everyone to the Think Pink and Grow Rich call on dynamic email marketing. So tonight we're going to talk about marketing your business through email. And here's the thing, email's become a bit of a challenge. So it's, you know, kind of like voicemail was, I think, a few years ago, where a lot of people aren't returning voicemails, a lot of people aren't returning emails now. But there are some things that we have to know in order to get emails responded to, because you can still effectively use email marketing. You can use it with your prospects, with your customers, and even with your team as well. And we're going to talk about all those different groups tonight. I do want to remind you there's a Q&A call Thursday night. Chris and I will actually be in Dallas. And I know a lot of you are heading to Dallas for seminar. So I'm not sure we'll see you down there, but we're going to be down there. We'll be doing the Q&A call from a hotel room near you. So make sure you call into that, because I think that is our second to last Q&A call in the program. So just make sure that you're on that, because like I said, it's always a great time to get coaching around your business. And usually if you have a challenge or a question, other people do as well. So everybody benefits. Okay, so let's talk about email marketing. Any emails that you communicate or promote your business can be considered marketing. So anything that you send out, there's some strategies to use to make it most effective, and that's what we want to make sure you have tonight. So number one on our worksheet says the purpose of our emails are different based on our audience. So I think that with every email you send out, as far as communication goes, you should consider what its intention is. Because a lot of times I'll come across an email that doesn't have a really clear goal. It's either asking me to do a lot of different things, or it seems to have a lot of different information in it. Have you ever noticed when you send a friend or somebody who works with you an email and it's like a three-part email, they'll respond to it, but you'll only get an answer to one part of it, and then you're like, oh, I need the other two pieces. That's because people are usually focused on one thing. So you have to make your email, the intent of your email, focused on one thing. So with your team, what you really want to use email for is to educate them and inspire them. So educate and inspire. You can write those two words in there next to team. The purpose of emailing your customer and using marketing with them is to educate them and build your relationship. So educate them and build the relationship. So here's the reason educating them is so important. Because if all you ever send customers is promotional information, you know, buy two, get one free, 50% off this, eventually people start to tune out when it's just promotions. Even when it's great promotions, people tend to tune out. So in order to be considered a welcome guest by your customers and your prospects, instead of like an annoying pest who they don't even open the emails anymore, you have to send them good, relevant information. And that means educating them about whatever topic it is that's relevant to what, you know, what your business is. So obviously for Chris and I, when we send out information, it's going to be around business improvement and financial growth and things like that. For you, it could be all kinds of topics, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into this. So with prospects, your job is to educate and be in front of them when they are ready to buy. So this is the interesting thing about marketing, any type of marketing. We usually do it, and we do it intensely when we need to sell something, right? As soon as all of a sudden we see like sales going down or the activity for the month is not great, then we get into, you know, this motion and we go market because we need to sell something. But the best way to use marketing is to be in front of people on a consistent enough basis that you're who they think of when they need to buy something. That's the purpose of marketing. And the only way to stay in front of people on a regular basis without being annoying is educating them. That's why in all three of these, one of the purposes with all three groups is to always educate them. Because here's the thing, people will still open email that has good information. If too many times in a row they open it and it's fluff or it's just promotional stuff, they'll stop opening it. So keep that in mind. Okay, number two, with every single email, our intention is to get it opened, read, and responded to. So the intention is to get it opened, read, and responded to. So here's why we start the whole topic tonight on getting the email opened, because the bottom line is if people don't open it, it doesn't matter what it says inside. Just like a letter in the mail, it has to be opened first for it to have any value. So let's talk about getting it opened. So here's a reality check for you. Nowadays, a 20% open rate to a mass email is considered great. If you have a list of 100 people and 20 people open it, that's actually considered fantastic. Chris and I have about 5,000 Mary Kay business owners on our list, consultants and directors. And when I send out our newsletter, if I have 600 to 700 people open it, I'm thrilled. And if you do the math, that's not even 20%. So that's kind of the reality, is that when we send out emails and we're counting on the email to bring in the last sales that we need for the goal, et cetera, we're really banking on less than 20% of those people that we send it to actually ever seeing it. So even though most people won't see your email, and that's just, like I said, the reality, there are some things you can do to increase your open rate. And if you don't do any of these, then you may not even have a shot of 5% of people opening your email. So to get a higher percentage, you have to implement some of these strategies we're going to give you. So three things in number four, three things determine your open rate and determine how many people open your email. Who it comes from, what it's about, and when it shows up in their inbox. Okay, so who it's from, that's the sender. That's the first and foremost determining factor if someone's going to open your email, is they see you, they see your name, they know you, they like you, so they open it. There's a couple of things I do to make sure my emails stand out, and once I mention this to you, it'll probably become obvious. We use asterisks before and after our name so that when you receive our emails in the from column, it'll sort of stand out from everybody else's name that doesn't use asterisks, unless, of course, you're on lists of people who use asterisks. So our emails already stand out. Another thing that happens is when people sort their emails and who they're from, any symbols will be above the A's. So instead of it saying Aaron and Alan and whatever, it'll actually have our emails first and foremost at the top. So that's just a little trick you can use to have it stand out. The second thing, the what, is about the subject lines. What does the subject line say? Is it intriguing? Is it enticing? We're going to spend quite a bit of time on subject lines tonight because really that's the second most important piece to an email getting opened. And then when it shows up, is it convenient for your reader? Now here's the thing, you may have all kinds of people you're sending the email to, but if you know anything about their demographics, you can sometimes guess as to when a good time to send an email is. So for example, let's say you have a lot of working mothers on your team, or mothers in general. I would say from 3 to 7 o'clock at night is probably the worst time to send an email. Because what are they doing? They're picking up the kids. They've got after-school activities, dinner, bath time, bedtime. That whole ritual, for the most part, working mothers are never at their email from 3 to 7. Or if they're checking it, it's really fast, and they're only looking for the urgent emails. That is likely when your email will get skipped. For us, we work with a lot of female entrepreneurs, and I find that if we send an email out in the morning, sometime between 9 and 11, or in the evening, sometimes between 9 and 11, it has a higher open rate. And I think about it, and I think, well, in the morning, what's the first thing we do when we get to our desk? The first thing we do is we check email, right? And then 9 to 11 at night, we put the kids down. We're kind of like wrapping up for the day, kind of going through our inbox. Is there anything I missed? Kind of getting set for the next day. So those two time periods seem to work well. Mid-afternoon I would skip. And again, this all depends on the demographic and who you're trying to reach. I will give you this example, though. I was sitting at my desk late one night, and an email came through from this man named James Malinchak. And James Malinchak, he's a multimillionaire, lives in Vegas, and I'm on his mailing list because he's a great marketer. And he was on ABC's Secret Millionaire show, if you remember that show where they took millionaires and put them undercover and had them go in and work in different nonprofits. And then at the end of the show, had to give away their $100,000 of their own money to these different nonprofits they had worked with that they thought were really worthy of the money. So anyways, I had met him. I was on his list. So one night, and I'd been on his list for a couple months and, you know, seeing his emails and quite frankly not opening them. And so all of a sudden I get this email from James Malinchak and it says, "Nancy, are you still up?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, how does he know I'm, you know, how does he know I'm up?" I opened the email. I thought it was sent specifically to me. I really did. I fell for it. I opened it up and I started reading it and realized it was a, you know, general email sent to everybody. I thought, wow. That was great. That was great timing because he knows on his list are a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of us are at our email, you know, a lot later than we should be. So that's an example of, you know, when you send an email can have an impact on your open rate. Okay, so number five, subject lines must meet certain criteria to be effective. So subject lines must be brief. They must be enticing or intriguing, and they must be about them, the reader, and not you, the sender. There's rare exceptions. There's a couple of exceptions. But for the most part, it should be about them and something they're going to get, you know, from this email, not about you necessarily. So when I say brief, I once heard somebody, his name's Dan Kennedy, he's probably the world's richest marketer. I heard him once say that in a subject line or a headline, when you have to be brief, you should use no unnecessary words. He said, imagine that each word costs you $1,000 to use. So you want your subject lines to be as succinct as possible. And there's also some email programs that if they're too long or too wordy, it'll cut them off. So, you know, people wouldn't even see the whole message anyways. Okay, so be brief, be enticing, have it be about them and not you. So here are some examples of bad headlines on the next page, and then some good ones as well. So a bad headline, and believe me, I've seen all of these. Like I took these right from my inbox. So an example of a bad logo, bad headline, we've changed our logo. I mean, seriously, who cares? Like, if Chris and I change our logo, is that really something worthy of sending out an email about to you? I mean, maybe if we've moved, you know, address or something like that, you know, you might care, but not our logo. So that was a big who cares. September's newsletter. So it's just way too generic. I mean, if I didn't read August's newsletter or July's, why would I care about September's? I see a woman that uses this every month, and I think to myself, well, tell me what's in it. You know, she's got good content. That's the shocking thing. She's got good stuff, but I wouldn't know that from the subject line, so my default is to just skip over it. Last, we're having a sale. This is just overused. You know, everybody's having a sale, so it's bland. It's kind of vanilla. It doesn't really stand out to you. Much easier to skip that email than open it up and find out what they're talking about. So here's some good headlines, and these are ones that I've actually used. Goal setting is useless. The reason I use that is because it's controversial. You know, you're going to have a reaction to that. You're going to have a reaction and actually agree and say, it is useless. I've used it my whole life, but I haven't achieved my goals. Or you're going to say, no, it's not. That's exactly what you should be doing. All the successful people say you should do it. So either way, it sparks almost like an emotion in people. That was one of our highest opened newsletters is when that was the subject line. Three ways to turn no into yes. Now, obviously, this appeals to a specific group of people, right, people that are trying to get a yes for something, so people in sales. But the other reason it's intriguing or useful is because it has a limited number right in the title, three ways. And people nowadays are so busy and so overwhelmed with information that when we give them a number, a number like limiter, 3, 5, 7, whatever it is, 9 ways, 5 secrets, they subconsciously think, okay, I can handle that amount of information. Like if you just were to write, you know, here are different ways to turn no's into yeses, they might already be thinking there's 50 ways to do it. So if you give them a small number, they think that's digestible. I can open that and take the time to read that information. And then the last one there, using their name, that's always helpful to get emails opened, is using the person's name, the number one secret to lowering stress. So there you've used their name, you've made it personal, and you've used like mystery or curiosity in order to get the person to open the email. So I'm trying to think of an email I sent out just a few weeks ago. It was on vision boards. So I had had this really cool experience with a vision board, and I wanted to share it with our readers. And every time I tried to write the subject line for the email, it just was boring. It was about vision boards. I mean, everybody talks about vision boards. Everybody should have a vision board. Like, it's been a topic for a long time. So I thought, well, what can I say in the subject line to entice people, to get them to open it? So I wrote why vision boards don't work. The article was about how my vision board did work, how, and I don't know if you saw the newsletter, but it was about how I had posted a couple years ago a picture of a house overlooking water, and the picture was of the water, of the bay in Rochester. And then Chris and I moved in December, and I kid you not, I did not even see how similar, and we live in a house that overlooks the bay, didn't even see how similar the view was from what I had on my vision board. And I know that sounds ridiculous, like why wouldn't you have noticed that, but I really didn't until we moved in. Chris pulls out my vision board one day and holds the picture in front of me and goes, look familiar? So I went to our back deck, I took a picture of the view that we have, and I put both of those in the newsletter. And I said, okay, so vision boards clearly do work, but let me tell you why I think sometimes we make mistakes with them when they don't work, because obviously I've got things on my vision board that haven't come true, and so there's some things I know I could do better. So that was kind of the gist of the article, that they do work, but you have to do some things specifically, and there's things I could improve in order to have them be more effective. So that was why I called it Why Vision Boards Don't Work. Well, I get an email from a woman, and she's like so upset with me because she's like, I think the title of your email should have been Why Vision Boards Do Work. So I wrote her back, and I kindly said, I appreciate the feedback, but let me ask you this. Do you think people would be more likely to open my email if it said vision boards do work or vision boards don't work? Obviously, the more controversial and the one that's like people would get really like, what is she talking about? That's going to have more of an open rate, and then I get people to read my message. So start to look at your emails and think, how can I change the subject line to get people to open them up? Okay. So when to send emails depends on the best time for your audience. So we talked about this a little bit. So when would be the best time to send an email to moms of school-age children, which I just talked about, which is avoid the 3 to like 7 or 8 p.m. time slot because they're busy with the kids. Women with jobs, so women that are employed, a good time to send them is 10 a.m. 10 a.m. is usually the sweet spot for people wanting a break. If they get to work at 8 and they take lunch at noon, 10 a.m. is a great time for them to go get a cup of coffee. And what do people do when they get a cup of coffee? They sit down and they go through their email. And they allow themselves 15 minutes to just chill because it's like the rationalization, right? I'm going to take a break now. I'm taking a coffee break. And they'll get on Facebook or they'll look at their email. So that's actually a good time to send them. Business builders, so other people that are in business, like I said, 9 to 11 p.m. is a great time. When I got that email from him that said, Nancy, are you still up? I thought it was personal and sent to me, so I opened it up. Okay, number 7 says, how often you send emails depends on your audience as well. So how often you send emails depends on your audience as well. So when you send emails to your team, it's okay to send them two to three times a week, especially if you're doing the education and the inspiring that you should be doing if you're sending out meeting notices and meeting updates and product reviews and product news and contests and all that kind of stuff, you're going to want to be in regular communication. But here's how to make it easier for your team and how to have them not get inundated or overwhelmed and just start like blocking, you know, mentally blocking out the emails. In brackets, put the topic or the subject or like the theme of the email, okay? And then, so you'll notice when you get an email from us that's like a newsletter, or you'll notice when you get an email from us about the Think Pink program, it'll say in brackets TPGR3, and then it'll have the message, the subject. Or if you get our weekly insights, I think it's called, that supports the Think Pink program, again in brackets, it's going to say weekly insights, and then it'll have the title or the subject about, you know, what the email is about. So use brackets so that your team knows what the email is about. You know, if it's a team, if it's a meeting update, put meeting update in brackets and then the topic. You know, location changed, or don't forget to bring your blah, 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 or bring a guest and receive a blank, you know, whatever it is. If it's product news, put that in brackets so that they can look through it and they can kind of see the things that are urgent. If it's urgent, put it urgent in brackets. You know, a subject line I've told people to use when they tell me, my team just doesn't read my emails. Nobody reads my emails. I say, okay, here, I'm going to give you a great subject line to use. You can't use it all the time, maybe once a year, but this is the one to get it opened. The subject line will say, if you open no other email from me this year. Now, I know that's long, so if there's any words that you could leave out, leave it out. But if you open no other email from me, open this one. And people, like, they see that, and they're like, oh, my God, what's wrong? I have to open up. What's going on? You know what I mean? But that is how you get somebody's attention, is be dramatic. Customers, I would say no more than one time per week. And I know there's people that would disagree with me on this. Some people say more frequently. Some people say less frequently. Quite frankly, I can handle an email a week, especially if it's short and it's sweet. Anything more than that, I stop opening them. You know, and if it goes a couple months and I haven't seen something from someone, usually that's also a reason I'll skip it, you know. So I think once a week, maybe once every other week is a sweet spot for customers. And then prospects, when you want to contact them, let's say it's a prospect that you got from a lead event. So it's a lead that you got, you know, at an event. I would tend to send a promotion about whatever it is they received, if it's a free facial or something like that. I would send it out three times. I'd send like an initial introduction or email or whatever it is, maybe the announcement of what it is that they, you know, won or whatever, and then two follow-up reminders. And so I might use, you know, subject lines that have the announcement in it, or, you know, here's what you won. Don't forget to claim your prize, or probably stay away from the word prize, though. I think that's a one that flags the spammers. Don't miss out, last chance, you know. So those types of things get people, you know, sometimes they're like, all right, what is this thing? I need to check it out. But don't feel bad about emailing prospects at least three times, because quite frankly, the first couple emails, people can just overlook them. It's not that they're ignoring you, they just didn't even see them. Some go into the spam filters nowadays. So much ends up in your junk email folder. So don't assume that people aren't responding. They may not have even seen it. So send at least three reminders to prospects. Okay, so that's how to get the email opened. Now how to get it read. Number 8 says, if someone has opened your email, you have 3 to 7 seconds to catch their interest. That's not a long time. So you've got to be pretty quick to the point. And this goes for team members as well. If they open your email and they don't see right away like what the topic is and what the benefit is, don't bury the purpose of the email at the end. You want to be upfront and right in the beginning with it. So that first line in the email, or a headline or whatever it is that comes first, it must answer WIIFM. So it must answer what's in it for me, meaning the person opening the email, or it needs to be about the conversation already going on in their head. Okay, so that first line or headline must answer what's in it for me, like what's the benefit for them to keep reading, or be about the conversation already going on in their head. So conversations going on in people's heads. What kind of things, you know, qualify as that? Holidays are always a great thing to have your marketing focused on or be the theme of your marketing because everybody is always, like, living for the holiday. So it doesn't matter if it's Christmas, Valentine's Day, July 4th, Halloween, whatever it is, people have it on their mind. They're either preparing for it, they're taking time off for it, they're having guests for it. So it's a great time to, you know, to contact people and have it be around that topic. Seasons as well, you know, summer's here, winter is coming, you know, be prepared. And I'm always thinking like things like, you know, summer, sunscreen, you know, winter, dry skin. So all the things that, you know, people need associated with seasons. You know, Thanksgiving could be, you know, promotions around giving thanks to people, thanking the people in your life. The holidays are a great time to send gifts to people. There's so many things we use in our marketing. News, you know, newsworthy events, things that have happened are great ways to reach out to people. But whatever the conversation is in people's heads, right, election years, you know, sometimes people are, like, so sick of the election commercials, you could, you know, kind of put a spin on that. So anything that's of, I'd say, of top of mind for people are the kind of things you want to capitalize on in your marketing. Okay, number 10, make it easy for them to read by adding what we call visual appeal. So visual appeal includes things like white space, bold font, and I'm going to give you an examples of this, and pictures and graphics. So I'll say those again. So make it easy for people to read by using white space, bold font, and pictures and graphics. So basically, when you get an email, if it's all kind of clumped together and not easy to read, it's actually going to inhibit people from reading it, and they're going to give up. If they can't find the core message rather quickly, they'll tend to just close the email. So white space is simply by breaking things up and making it easier for people to read. Bold font, I tend to use it a lot, either bold font, maybe sometimes italics. But here's what you want to do with it. You want to make sure that what you bold could be read if somebody skimmed through the email, okay? So you know about the disc styles, right? Because most everybody knows about the disc style if you're in Mary Kay. The high D's are not going to read a long email. Now, they will skim through an email, so they'll look for bullet points and that kind of thing. So what I do is I create a reader path for them to follow by just bolding important things throughout the email. And if they were to just read the bold words or phrases, they would actually get a gist of what the email was about. Okay? So the S's and C's are probably more likely to read it line for line. Depends, not all of them. But the D's and the I's, especially when they're in a hurry, they're not going to read a long, winded email. So make those reading paths for them. And then pictures and graphics, here's the thing. It's so true when they say pictures are worth 1,000 words, because especially when you show pictures of people with emotion, it, for some reason, we just will read longer because we see that picture. So basically, you know, a picture of women, women with children, happy emotions, sad emotions, frustrated emotions. Like when we have, let's say, a sales page where we're trying to sell a program or a product that solves the problem for women, helps them overcome their fear, helps them overcome stress, helps them manage their time better. The first picture we're going to show you is a picture of what we think that woman looks like because she doesn't, you know, make phone calls for her business because she can't manage her time well. We're going to show a picture of a frustrated, overwhelmed woman because that strikes the right emotion. If someone starts reading it and they look at that picture, they go, oh, my God, that looks like me, right? So they keep reading, they keep reading. Now they start to read about the solution that you have. And now we post a picture of showing a woman that looks, you know, well-rested and happy and healthy and thriving, et cetera. So it's sort of like the before and the after pictures, which, by the way, are always effective in marketing, before and after, whether it's weight loss, you know, haircuts, anti-aging, before and after is always really hits home with people. Okay, so and sometimes you can't find the perfect picture, but I think any graphic is better than no graphic for the most part, as long as it relates to what it is that you're writing about. The PS of a letter or an email is the most often read, let me say that again, the PS of a letter is the most often read part of an email after the opening line. So we're not sure why, but people tend to skim down, and they will read the intro and they will read the PS. It's almost like skipping to the end of a book to read the ending. Like, I just want to know how this is going to end. So it's really important to use that PS. Like, don't let it go to waste. Don't just end with your name. Anything that you wanted them to do. Remember how we said every email should have an action item? So anything you want them to do, reiterate it in the PS. Any offers you made, any deadlines that you have, any actions that you want them to take, make sure you restate it in the PS because that's the last thing that they're going to see. Might be the only thing they see. So make sure that's powerful. And some of our letters or emails, they'll have like a PS, a PPS, a PPPS, if I have a lot of things I want people to, you know, remember or really drive home, I'll put, you know, a couple PSs on there. Okay, so now get it responded to. So we've got it opened, we've got them reading it, and now we want them to take an action and respond. So number 12 says, you must have only one specific offer or call to action. So you must have one specific offer or call to action. Like I said earlier on, if you have multiple purposes for your email, you want them to click on this and respond to this and write to you back about this, you know, if you're lucky, they'll get back to you about one thing. But really, it's getting them to focus and take one action. We always say in marketing that confused minds don't buy. Confused minds also don't act. So if they're confused at all about the intent of your email, they may not do anything. So number 13 says, without a deadline, people will always default to, I'll do it later. And if you want proof of that, think about how many emails you open but don't act on because you think, well, I'll get to it later. I mean, it's why our inboxes, you know, overflow. Because so many of those things we look at, we're like, eh, I'll get to it later. I'm not going to do it right now. So it's possible that you've sent things out that people actually wanted to take advantage of, which is, by the way, why we send multiple emails about the same thing. But when you're asking people to do something and you don't give them a deadline and some sort of like compelling reason to take action now, they will always default to doing it later. And just as an aside, when Chris and I put on a teleclass, we tend to send out 3 to 5, well, it could be more than 5 emails about the event. But even when people register, we tend to send 3 reminder emails. We'll send one 2 days before the day of, and then, you know, 2 hours before the call. Now, some people might think that's kind of crazy. But really, we've had people thank us, like, thank you for sending that last email. I knew there was something I was going to do tonight, and you guys reminded me at the last minute. I would have missed the class if you hadn't sent that last email. So, you know, for as many people as you might irritate by over-communicating, when you're reminding people to do something, it's, you know, you're going to have as many people thanking you for the reminders. So we err on the side of reminding you too much when there's a call rather than not enough. Okay, so 14, move people to action by creating scarcity. So move people to action by creating scarcity. So what that means is, and deadline's one way to do it, you know, having a time cut off, but another thing that's very effective is telling them that there's a limited number. So this works really great. Like if you've got something in inventory that you're trying to move and you only have, you know, 10 left or 4 more and then it's gone. You know, Chris and I had created an audio program once and then we changed the name of it and changed the packaging on it. But we still had some of the old ones left in inventory and the content was still good. It was all the same content, but just really the packaging had changed, which you ladies know all about, packaging changing. So that's what we did is we sent out an email promotion and we marketed it and just said we're reducing the you know, price. It's great content. It's all the same content as, you know, the new system. It's just in this old packaging. And just by updating people and telling them we had 10 and then we had 5 and then we had 3 left, we sold them within a couple days. So using scarcity to get people to take action is often very effective. Okay. And number 15, don't forget that women love the F word. And I am talking about the word free. So get your mind out of the gutter, ladies. Women love the word free. So give them bonuses for taking action. So Chris and I have noticed that whenever we incentivize people with something free, they're crazy. They'll jump over tables to get to free stuff. So if they act now, which is what you want them to make a decision now, then incentivize them to do that by giving them bonuses. Chris and I were at a guest event last year with National Sales Director Judy Kowicki. She was in the Rochester area, and they did an event, and she was, you know, it was a guest event, and they were asking for sign-ups right there on the spot, no take it home and think about it. And what she did to incentivize them was she had 3 roll-up bags, which everybody wants, for the first 3 people that signed up. And you should have seen these women rush the stage. It was hilarious, you know. And so those types of things, you know, in my opinion, when you're giving stuff away, it's always effective. Now, Chris and I like to give coach bags away, which is, you know, fun if you can do it. But it doesn't have to be that elaborate. I mean, free samples, it's amazing to me what people will do for free samples. So just remember that when you're trying to incentivize people to take action, even in your emails, to get people to meetings. You know, have a bonus or an incentive for showing up. Have a bonus for showing up to, you know, 3 months of meetings without missing. Have a bonus for bringing a guest. All those types of things you want to incentivize people for. So on the next page, what I have for you is an email from a Pink Cadillac director, I'm happy to report, that I was working with and coaching with last year. And the first page is an email that she had written, and then she, before she sent it out to her team, she sent it to me and said, I know this needs some work, so can you go through this and, you know, do what you do to it and help me out with it. So let me see if, make sure I bring out the main. Okay, so as you can see from looking at the first one, it's kind of all scrunched together. It's not really easy to read. You know, some things pop out, like you see the numbers in that first paragraph. But really with 3 big block paragraphs, it's really not easy, you know, to digest this information. You really have to read the entire thing word for word to really get to what it is that she's conveying and then what it is she's asking you to do. On the next page, I give the show you the sample of the email that I sent back to her and the one that she ultimately sent out to her team. So the first thing I did was I added white space. I broke up the paragraphs, right? That was the first thing. The second thing I did was I used color and, you know, different – I didn't use different fonts, but I used different color along the way to kind of, again, break it up. Most important, I put something in here because of something she said to me on the phone. Hold on, let me look at her original email and I'll be able to show you. So the first email, she was talking about how her unit deserves to be a Cadillac unit. She says, it's so important to me to represent you as our unit as a Cadillac sales director so that you will receive the recognition our unit so rightly deserves once again. So she had been in a pink Cadillac. You know, we are women of high integrity, work ethic, providing excellent customer service, and I want you to all hold your heads up high and proudly tell the world that you are part of a pink Cadillac unit in Mary Kay. So that's all well and good, and that was heartfelt from her. That's what she really wanted. But what she said to me on the phone was, I appreciate my Equinox, I really do, but let's face it, Nancy, it's not a pink Cadillac. And when she said that, she was being so honest and so authentic, and I said to her, you have to say that. And she's like, oh, I can't say that. I don't want to seem ungrateful. I don't want to blah, blah, blah. I said, no. I said, you have to be that authentic because that's real for you. I said, and conveying that emotion to your team, they will feel that. I said, it's not that the other stuff isn't true, but I said, but you need to put some of yourself back in the equation. This isn't all about your unit. It is about you too. So I had her put it in here, which, believe me, she was a little resistant to do it first. So she added in the third paragraph down when she says, 2 years ago we were in car requalification and didn't qualify for the Cadillac. I am grateful to drive a silver Chevy Equinox, but let's face it, it's just not the same as a Cadillac. So she made it more about her, like almost like a personal plea and more personal. She also showed vulnerability there, and I think that's really important and something we're not – encouraged to do or just resistant to doing because we don't want to look weak. But you have to remember that people, we're more appealing to people when we're showing our vulnerability than when we're showing our credibility or our infallibility. So, you know, when Chris and I go speak, we could stand up and just, you know, talk about our accomplishments and how well our business is doing and how much money we made last year and what kind of cars we drive and blah, 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 what kind of degrees we have, how many books we've written. And I don't know about you, but when I'm sitting there listening to that, I kind of tune out because I can't relate to it. I'm like, well, I don't know what the person's, you know, life is like, and my life isn't like theirs. And so what we share, it's not that we don't share any of our accomplishments, but we also tend to share our vulnerability. We share where we came from. You know, and I struggled the first, and I'm sure you know this story. You've probably heard it 100 times if you're listening to these calls. I struggled the first 5 years in my business and was making about $30,000 a year, barely scraping by, and I was stuck, and I dreamed of six figures. But it was elusive. I didn't have a clue of how to do it. When I share that struggle with people, especially women business owners who are there, that's the part where they connect with me. That's the part they relate to me, not because I have a really successful business now. It's like they see where I was and they see where I am now, and that's why they want to work with me. It's not because of the accomplishments on their own. It's because now they know where I started. So if you don't share any of your vulnerability, and again, I know there's a ton of resistance to this, you're really missing out on the real, in my opinion, opportunity to inspire your team. Because if they never know that you struggle and that you find a way and that you how you deal with missing a goal and those types of things, then they just wonder if they're all alone. So when I encouraged her to share her vulnerability, believe me, she was very resistant to it. But like I said, they are now a pink Cadillac unit. And I'm not saying this email is the whole reason for that. I can't take all the credit. But I will tell you this. She said her people rallied in June, last June, unlike she'd ever seen them rally before. So those are from her lips, not mine. Okay, so moving on, I did bold some things. I caught, and what I did there where you see the blue font where it says we currently need $7,000 more wholesale by June 30th, I centered it and I, you know, put it in blue because I was calling attention to what she needed them to do, the action that she needed them to take. I wanted it to stand out from the rest of the email. So if you look at that page, except for my boxes, by the way, that are in blue, that statement, and I probably nowadays would have even blown the font up, make it a little bigger, because that statement really stands out, and it tells them exactly what it is that she needs. Then it talks about anyone able to, you know, bump their order to 200. I made those bullets. Those bullets had been buried in a paragraph before, and they didn't stand out at all. So what I did was I called attention to the bonuses that were available by bulleting them and then bolding the numbers. And then at, you know, the next page, I did bold. So again, if you were to read just the bold, let's see, just the bold, the colored font, and the bulleted list, you'd get the point of the email. You wouldn't have to actually read all the detail. So I had her bold and italicized. You know, I don't ever bug you about ordering because it was true. She never does. I'm persistently pleading now. Right? So now this is a call to action that's very personal to her because she doesn't often do this. She reiterates, you know, the last day to order is June 30th. Don't wait. Get yours in today. And if I had been thinking, I would have put a PS and I probably would have put, you know, whatever, multiple ways they can order, might reiterate the date again, you know, whatever it was that I thought needed to be said again. Okay. Phew, I feel like I talked really fast because I'm a little winded and out of breath, and we're a little bit early. So what I would like to recommend is that you set up an email campaign for something coming up, let's say a three-step email campaign. That can be for a promotion that comes out. Yes, I have the new lash serum. So if you wanted to do a three-step email campaign about that, let me share this story because I thought this was really interesting. On Sunday, my niece, she sells Leah Sophia, not for her full-time job, just on the side, and she had a Leah Sophia party, and she decided to invite a friend of hers who does Mary Kay, who I happen to know, and so they were going to do a pedicure party, but the woman would be selling Mary Kay and my niece would be selling Leah Sophia. And sometimes those joint parties don't do well because, you know, what I've heard is that, you know, people have only so much money to spend and now they got to decide, do I spend it on makeup or skincare or do I, you know, spend it on jewelry? Don't make me choose. But so here's what happened. So I said to the Mary Kay girl, because I wanted to buy something from her and support her, you know, efforts. So I said to her, okay, tell me what I must have. Like, what's the must have, you know, product? And she said, have you heard of the lash serum yet? And I said, yes, of course I've heard of it. I said, but tell me about it. So she started telling me about it. And, of course, she had me sold immediately. But here's the beautiful thing. Two other women sitting there who heard it bought it as well. Okay, and ended up buying mascara and, you know, a couple other things. So I just looked around and saw, and there were only five women there at the time. And three of them bought the lash serum just because this girl explained what it does. And I thought to myself, you know what? This shows you how easy it is to get women to spend money on problem areas. So what woman doesn't want longer lashes or thicker eyebrows, right? We're all suckers for that stuff. So it was so easy for her to just tell us what this would do and have us jump on board. She ended up getting three orders. So that, to me right there, tells me it's a compelling product. I would set up a three-email sequence. I would use, you know, all the tips in this call, the subject line, you know, make it enticing, get it opened. You're going to seminar. If you have an email program, and there are email programs specifically for Mary Kay that will do this, you can set up emails to go out while you're gone. So let's say you're at a seminar with some of your team. You can leave an email sequence to go out while you're gone and touch base with your team that's home. You know, how cool is that? Sending an email from seminar, you know, the girls and I are thinking about you or whatever it is. It's a great thing to do when you're going on vacation this summer. If you're going away for, you know, 7, 10 days, but you're afraid of being out of touch that long, you can set up an email sequence to go out to your team while you're gone, to go out to your prospects while you're gone, to go out to your customers while you're gone. So what I would say is, you know, summer is a busy time for people. This is a great time to use this information. So that's your homework. Come up with a 3-step email sequence for either your team, your prospects, your customers, with something fun, you know, summertime, make it applicable. People are on vacation, they're out in the sun, whatever it is, tie that in, and obviously let us know if you have success with it. So email, again, it's, you know, it's not the end-all, be-all of marketing because so many of them don't get through to people, and there's, you know, like I said, 20% is a great open rate, but it's still a huge part of how people get their message out. Next call, what we're going to talk about is actually other types of marketing. A lot of people ask us about Facebook. How do I use social media to grow my business? So that's what the whole next call is about, how to use Facebook, the do's and don'ts, and then how to use other types of marketing as well, because we don't want to ever get overly reliant on email or any one type of marketing, because that type of marketing can actually go away. It's hard to believe, but, you know, MySpace at one point was thought, you know, people thought it would never go away, and then Facebook came along and, you know, pretty much made MySpace, you know, obsolete. People used to fax marketing materials all the time, or people used to call people all the time, and then those laws went into effect that prohibited that. So at any point, I mean, just imagine email marketing suddenly being taxed. What if you had to pay tax on every email you sent out? I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but those are the types of things that happen. So you have to have multiple things working in your business, and that's what the call next time is about. So I just want to say good night to everybody. Hope you enjoyed the call. Hope your summer's going great. Happy New Year again. And for those of you going to seminar, I know you're going to have a great time. You're going to come home all excited and pumped up. And we look forward to you sharing that enthusiasm with us. So don't forget the Q&A call on Thursday night. And everybody have a good night.